South Africa's Louis Moholo and the Moholo Octet with You Ain't Gonna Know Me Cause You Think You Know Me, a piece written in memory of beloved trumpet player Mongezi Feza. This appears on, I'm trying to remember now, it's the 1978 album, Moholo's 1978 album, Spirits Rejoice. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and a bunch of things developing, but I want to return to some familiar themes today. First, of course, you know, today being Tuesday, the big anticipated speech of your president tonight before Congress, and what we're supposed to be listening for, what we're supposed to be alert about, and what he's about to say about what, I'm not worried about it. And I'm not getting all exercised about it. Whatever he has to say, go ahead and say. My attitude is, I've been through worse than you. I've been through worse than you. So there isn't very much about this president that scares me, in the sense that I think that all hope is lost and there's no way we could survive, that he give him total power over our lives, that he occupies every single minute of our existence, and he's permanently etched into our thoughts, the ultimate and complete vanquishing of the people. No, I'm not part of the crowd that is volunteering for being vanquished. So whatever he does, he says, we'll figure it out when he says it. But in the meantime, we have to take a look again and continue to analyze this until we get some clarity about what has happened, especially as it pertains to the Democratic National Committee. That story is not yet over. And we have to examine it as thoroughly as possible, because this is a very historic moment, a very significant moment in our political consciousness and maturity. And it requires us taking on the enemy. And the enemy, in this case, is us. We are also the enemy. We have just refused to deal head on with some yawning problems right staring us right in the face. And we think that it's something else. It couldn't be what we're seeing. It must be something else. Why? Because we are very, very uncomfortable about the truth that we see. In this case, what is the truth that we see? We know that there has been a change of leadership at the Democratic National Committee, which is the heartbeat of the Democratic Party. It basically is the nerve center of the Democratic Party. We know we have some very, very palpable feelings about the Democratic Party. And for all kinds of very, very logical reasons and very salient reasons, the Democratic Party, just the same, has to be called into account. And we cannot let this moment of transition just go by without making clear what has happened here. And somebody's got to pay. Somebody's got to pay the price for it. The whole idea, I mean, we need not go all the way back, because we've done that already. talking about the evolution of the Democratic Party, or the illusion, the evolution of any political party, but especially in the context that we typically talk about politics and political parties, the whole point of a political party is to consolidate power, and thereby to provide a form of defense, because this is the system that we live in. The defense mechanism was what actually got the Democratic Party to see the validity of moving from its trenchantly racist past, deeply enmeshed in the slavocracy, not just of the South, but of the North as well. The Democratic Party was not born in the crucible of this idea that all people are created equal and all of that stuff. No, it was born in the crucible of the interests of the power elite. How do we basically incorporate? How do we put together our interests under one roof and coordinate on a national level our reach, our authority, our apartheid, wanted to say our Trump cards, but it's not a very good pun. But essentially, that's what power was and power means, the idea that you have a consolidated base, which allows you to maneuver in Congress, in state legislatures, in local governments, city councils, etc. At all levels of government, therefore, you have a coordinated effort. We should make absolutely no mistake to forget that it was understood that that power was white, white controlled through and through. There came a time when there was a mathematical issue. Whites, as powerful as they were nonetheless not as numerous as they needed to be. The party, therefore, was faced with a challenge. We need to have heft. We need to have people in this party. And a begrudging opening of the sluices began. African Americans, Latinos, or all people, the party said, well, you know, it makes sense. If we are to gain this kind of power that we seek, we're going to have a presence all over the country. We can't do it with just the whites. So the logic of it allowed the Democratic Party to say, okay, we will send a new message out that we are, you know, the party of the future, the big tent concept, all people are invited in, come on in and be a Democrat and, you know, enjoy the good life. But we're clear, the Democratic Party has always been segregated. Even to this day, not even just racially segregated, but segregated in terms of access and power and all these things. There's a hierarchy, a racially based hierarchy, and it remains to this day. Even when the party is sinking, even now, right now, as they are, to borrow a phrase from David from Brooklyn, right now as they are shuffling the deck chairs on their sinking ship, the party is still very much hierarchical and racially so. Who has power to do things? Who is operating at what levels of power within the party? Who gets to have a say? And who gets to do the work? And this is where the party is right now. And we have to look at it and understand it. Because people are under the illusion that Democrat, we have come a long way in this country. No. People of color still are toting that barge and lifting that bale within the Democratic Party. And not only the Democratic Party, we are seeing this also in the so-called progressive parties. There's a racial hierarchy. The concept, which is implicit and explicit, but the idea is we will tell you what you must do. We, the white majority in that form the core elite within these parties. There is an elite within the progressive parties and third party movements. We get to do the heavy thinking. We do the philosophizing and we do the strategy planning and we do all of that kind of work. We just need you to do the nitty-gritty stuff. Come on in and clean up. Even now, the Democratic Party, it's on its deathbed. They have to call in somebody to clean it up. The whites in the party refuse to accept responsibility for the fact that they killed the party. They have run it into the ground. They refuse to acknowledge that they are the ones who took this party and did with it what they wanted to do with it. They locked out. There was no democracy in the Democratic Party. The nucleus of power within the Democratic Party was always white. Even when they didn't know what the heck they were doing. But it was assumed that their whiteness gave them the privilege and the superiority of foresight and, you know, vision and all of the other stuff, that they have all these skills. They don't have anything special. But they have a plan, and their plan still is, even within the new vision of the Democratic Party, specifically, I would say, even starting with Bill Clinton. Or you could even go back to Jimmy Carter. But with the Clintons, we saw this fill itself out. They create the illusion that you have a new vision, you have a new, more cosmopolitan outlook. You value input. And you want all these black people, all these brown people, all these people that you purposely locked out before to come in, because the purpose is not to build a party or to participate in the process. The purpose, your presence within the party, is simply to provide the muscle. To do the scut work. We need numbers. You're as good as any. But when we close the door, and when we begin strategy planning, and when we begin to discuss the relationship between your numbers and your power, the room is white. There's no room for anybody else. Look at this very situation that we're in now. Secretary of Labor is the new chair. The messaging has all to do with the fact that the Democratic Party has gone yet another. It has leaped over yet another hurdle in its march toward diversity and all that. You have a Latino, the son of Dominican immigrants, former Secretary of Labor, a highly credentialed person who has come in. And a lot of hoopla. This is great for the party, and he has a new vision. And just to demonstrate how new his vision is, he's brought in Keith Ellison, an African-American who represents the 5th District in Minnesota, who also happens to be Muslim. Well, what a winning thing. But it is the very height of contempt, I contend. It is exactly what I'm talking about. The Democratic Party has reached a point of no return in terms of its capacity within the white core elite group within it. And this is typical of all the political parties, where they can't avoid the reality that they have brought this operation to ruin. They failed spectacularly. And in failing, they have imperiled millions of lives, impacted millions of lives. The enormity of this failure is not to be the subject of discussion. This is not to be looked at as, say, the failure of a major, major, major corporation. It's just, you know, politics. Suddenly, it's just politics. But everybody knows, who was part of that power elite, how strategically important it was to be part of the power elite within this party, and how they intended to use the party and that power, and how, in fact, they did use the party and its power for their own ends. Clinton's are a spectacular example of it. But the formula also involved misusing and abusing the political power and the political will of the vast majority of people of color in this country. Now, it's been, what, a week? And already they've shut the door on the history of the reasons for this failure. The genesis of it, nobody's interested in taking a look at how the Democratic Party failed spectacularly. And the consequences of its failures, its political failures. Who did it? In any corporation, you know, when the company does not perform as forecast, it did not meet its projections, it did not perform accordingly, people get fired. They're called on the carpet and they are fired. There's no accountability here. Well, we had a little hiccup. And yes, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, kind of embarrassed us, so she had to go. And then Donna Brazile comes behind that, and, you know, we had to kind of encourage her to leave her post. But we're back. We're bouncing back. and life goes on. And look, we've got one Latino, we've got an African American. What should immediately come to our mind, if we still have a working mind, is that this is the cycle. They create the problems. They commit the wrongdoings. They're the ones who cause these spectacular failures. And then the blacks and Latinos have to come in and do the scut work and clean up. And they know, even as Tom Perez takes the helm, he also has to provide, he also has to find the wherewithal and provide the party the wherewithal to do the job. It's not like they said, well, we have a shifting of the guard, a changing of the guard, and okay, you're coming in, and we have everything in order. We have everything in order. You have a budget. You have personnel. We have a plan that you are free to tweak as you see fit. But this is the plan. We have reserves enough to anticipate any catastrophe. And you're set. You can concentrate on the business of politics. You can concentrate on the business of building and amassing power, especially among the grassroots. That's what you say, right? You're handing him a well-ordered term. He's got few things to think about except the growth of the party and getting more Democrats in office and taking on the issues and all of that stuff. He doesn't have to worry about this, that, and the next. But he comes in crisis, the crisis you created. And the crisis that could have been averted a long time ago if you weren't so racist a party. And the fact is that a lot of these people who were the authorities within the party for all those years, and I'm talking now decades, made an absolute mess of it. They brought it to the point where it literally is gasping for breath. It is fighting for its life. Now they think it's the right time to hand over the strings, because they've already squeezed from the party every possible benefit that they can get for themselves. We all know that the Democratic Party was a hotbed of corruption and continues to be. Did the party say, look, we have some cleaning up to do? No, we're going to give that to Perez. Here you are. You are the CEO of the Democratic National Committee, the nerve center of the Democratic Party. You have all this stature and power and all this other kind of stuff. And guess what? We have already made as much use of this thing as we possibly can. And now we can let you have your turn. I find it unbelievable that this sequence is occurring and we're not having these discussions about, well, wait a minute. Is this what you're trying to tell me is the good way to do politics in this country? Is this what I'm supposed to be investing in? is this what is supposed to be of benefit to me? All those years that you guys, that whites had utter and complete control of this party, its direction, everything. How much money was invested in creating new congressional candidates? How much money was invested in the issues concerning African Americans, Latinos, and other so-called minorities? Of the millions of dollars that you transformed the Democratic National Committee into being a money-making machine, a money-raising machine, whose political power did you increase? What were the issues that you can point to that said these distressed communities finally saw a breakthrough? And what the Democratic Party did with its capacity to leverage its power to create change, what it did was, in fact, create change. No. And silly blacks, silly Latinos, silly Asians, and other people from distressed communities. I think this probably might be a reflection of how desperate things were to get even close to the table of power, political power, that they put up with this stuff and that they willingly joined to say, you know what? There's nothing else. There's no other game in town. So we're going to go with this. The model is crooked and racist. They have shown over the years, the several decades, I'm just talking the 60s, from the 60s on. Corruption, corruption, corruption. Literally working against the interests of the people, using the people merely as pawns. We need numbers. We need masses of people to do what we want to do for ourselves. We need to have X number of people from these different communities to make it look good. All these decades of contempt and corruption, and making you feel that you're part of a process, you're part of a political process, you're calling the shots, you ain't calling any shots. This party worked. I shared with you about 2 weeks ago a speech by Shirley Chisholm talking about her run as a Democrat for President of the United States. And which party proved to be the biggest obstacle to progress? Her own party. And certainly she was qualified. She was a heck of a lot more qualified than Hillary Clinton. We know the stories of people like Adam Clayton Powell and others who believed and in turn persuaded us to believe that the Democratic Party at least offered a sliver of hope with respect to this business of participating in the democratic process. And in so doing, would benefit from galvanizing all of that political power to support progress, to support justice, to support democracy. That's not the case. And unfortunately, we see the same thing happening with these other third parties and movements. The racism is unbelievable. And they will not address it. Oh, we are going to do so and so and so. That means a small white group within the core of a so-called movement or party is actually making the decisions. And the last thing they have a tolerance for is democracy. They don't want to hear what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you think is a good plan. They are operating on the same white supremacist notion that you should just accept their automatic brilliance. And they're not to be questioned. What do you think? This is a democracy? No, we're the new people doing things the old way. Because it is so hard to break with that white supremacist notion. I think Hillary calls it exceptionalism. It prevails throughout. Donald Trump does not have a monopoly on this. His constituencies do not have a monopoly on this. This Democratic National Committee that just closed its shop in Atlanta last weekend and handed us the illusion of progress. What it actually did in Atlanta was just decide if and how much is there left, and how could we get it out of the Democratic National Committee, because there is a plan, clearly. There is a plan. The plan is, well, Hillary Clinton needs some kind of vehicle. You know, the Democratic National Committee has to raise money. And even if it's dying, I mean, it has a structure. It still could serve a purpose. It still can serve a purpose. But we don't want that purpose divided. We don't want people's attentions divided. We don't want people actually to believe that, you know what, we're turning this thing around. We really want to turn this thing around and deal with the masses of people. They still are into their white elite thing. And if she can get 2 tablespoons more blood out of this dying enterprise, they'll do that. The best way to do that is to indicate that the party is as open as it's ever been. Look, you got a Dominican, and you got an African American, and he's Muslim too. And we're turning the corner on this. This is the new Democratic Party. And we want people to be excited. Why? Because the more excited you are, the more likely you are to believe that this is a legitimate operation. And you will donate. If you were to ask right now how many new members of Congress will this Democratic National Committee create in the next 10 years, they can't answer you. If you were to ask them how many more new districts are they going to create, they can't answer you. That's not what they're there for. You have all of these criminal elements dominating the control of the party. People convicted for this, people indicted for that, people being investigated for the other. And that's been the consistent history of the Democratic Party. Who would want to join that? But they give it, the task is now, the time has come. Give the task to the blacks and the Latinos to clean it up. To make them smell good again. To use them in that way. Give them nothing. And put them, just plug them in to wherever it is you need to plug them in to carry this illusion that the Democratic Party is serious about the business of politics in these times. You know that I have taken on the Green Party for exactly the same thing. A contemptuous regard for the validity of political participation. True political participation and the accountability to those groups that make the investment far in excess of the numerical representation within the party. The Green Party to this day, since November, has not explained what it has done with the money it has raised. It has not explained the process that produced these ridiculous decisions that cost the party a lot of money to do a recount, clearly in the interest of Hillary Clinton. It has not explained a number of anomalies. It has not explained to its supporters what happened. What happened in the last election where you underperformed so spectacularly? It's already showing signs that, hey, just shut up and do what we ask you to do. We are the ones doing the thinking. You are the ones who should go out and do the scut work. There has been no definitive change in the attitude between the way the Democrats do business, historically have done business, especially with people of color, and their political interests, and their political currency. There's no difference. So where we are right now in this juncture, we have some serious thinking to do. They are counting on people being too embarrassed to raise the question. So it gives them room to do as they please. And we see the results And we continue to see the results of them doing as they please. We see people who, if put to the test, which I think is important and necessary, will have a hard time explaining all those lofty things that they say and the brutal translation, you know, in real life. You see all the errors of the system. But you are not prepared at all to explain why you're behaving worse than that. You look at these shows that say they're very progressive shows. On, you know, you look on YouTube and you look on television and so forth. And it is, there's no change from the 1950s in terms of temperament. This is not your world, they say to blacks, to Latinos, to people who are trying to advocate for extremely distressed communities. You have to come to us and ask us, just the way the, you know, the Democrats and Republicans handle things. We decide not only how to deal with it, we decide if to deal with it. In this day and age, imagine that the Democratic Party was formed, what, back in the 1700s? The oldest political party, not just in the United States, but practically in the world. And in 2017, you still have that slaveocracy mode of operating. You're dying because of it, but you can't part ways. You prefer to die rather than be fair and open and just plain human. You prefer to die. You're dying now. And you prefer to give Donald Trump the upper hand rather than say we submit or we share the leadership, the thinking, the strategies that we can benefit from in an open party. We just can't part ways with our white supremacy. We got to have it. Even if this party dies. And then the silly people come in. Tom Perez, I'm sure he's a decent guy somewhere. But it doesn't seem that he even gets the most important message. He is being brought in again at the behest of a white supremacist democratic system. He is being brought in to do something that no white person would be expected to do, to save a party, to work all these miracles with no money, no budget, no personnel, nothing that is reasonable, that should reasonably be in place. Because his benefactors already know, they already know what's going to happen. This party is sinking. They're not going to invest unnecessarily in a sinking proposition. So when it does die, it would die on his watch. And the blacks and the Latinos will be blamed. If only they were more enthusiastic. If only they participated more faithfully in the process. The party might have had a chance. But look, we gave them a shot, and look what happened. So we need to talk about these things, because it is not just confined to the regular sector of the world that we constantly use as a point of reference for these kinds of things. And correctly so. But we are also engaging in denial. And it needs to be called out. I have not yet seen anywhere a consistent and comprehensive analysis of the contradictions of those sectors that say they are the alternative. They don't behave like the alternative. They're not behaving like the alternative. They're just plain contradictions. And operating as normal on white supremacist beliefs. The world is to be seen through their eyes. Things are important as they see it. Solutions are devised according to their estimation. They are in control. Yes, even in the younger groups that we see, we do not see great enthusiasm for plurality. They're very comfortable with that all across, this is the same color, and it's white. And they're in charge. And they're running things. And they're right. And I don't understand why. To this day, for example, we still have Bernie Sanders running around without having faced an arsenal of attack. People saying, well, wait a minute. Why should we be so comfortable with you in our midst? What exactly are you about? We know what you've said. Now account for what you did. And in our model, do we have room for a traitor? In our model of operating, do we require some kind of a, I don't know, you have to fulfill certain acts of contrition, I guess, to persuade us that you could be trusted in our midst? Or that we are actually working together. Not that there are four and five different agendas here, but there's one agenda, and it's public. And we are sharing this information with the people so they know. We're confused. And we let these people off the hook, and I'm going to say plainly, largely because even in this regard, their whiteness entitles them to credibility. They're not to be suspect. We're not to be suspicious of them. They are to be accepted just because they said, well, this is what I am. yeah, I know what you think I've done and so forth. Yes, yes, yes. But I'm telling you this is who I am. And let's move on. All these highly irregular things are to be accepted as regular and normal. And we aren't to question any of this at all. So where does this leave people? It means that we come back to the inevitable, which is you've got to think for yourself. You can't just easily, you know, switch into somebody else's plans and agendas. We have to demand things. We have to have people qualify themselves all the time. It certainly happens with us. We have to constantly demand proof. But most importantly, we have to arrive for ourselves, individually and collectively, what we consider to be a standard of operating. And instinctively, you will know when things are not going according to your standard. And then you go into that mode of deciding whether you stick around or you pack up your traps and you get out. We are not to be used. And we are not to put ourselves in a position of easily being used and abused like this. We have to subject all of these systems to very close scrutiny. And we can see immediately that even on the basics, they fall far beneath any standard that we could say is, well, basic. So why are we part of it? Why are we letting them get away with it? Why are we joining failure? Why are we supporting failure? We must begin to ask these questions. They're very uncomfortable, I know, but hey, tough noogies, we're going to have to ask these questions because guess what? And I'm not over-exaggerating. Our lives, our very lives will depend upon it. So you take your own tally. You take your own measure. And you tell me whether the political organizations that you belong to and support, whether you're comfortable with where they are, or do you strongly believe that you're going to have to get busy putting something else together that will help you survive? Because after all, that is the number one imperative, to survive. We'll pick this up again tomorrow because this is really, really important to talk about. And not just in a theoretical way, but to really try to get at the nub of it. Because I think we're at that point where no matter where we turn, we have to accept that there are going to be major contradictions for many, many of us. And these are not trivial matters. And we will have to have a way first of recognizing them, these contradictions, and then deciding what we are going to do about them within our control. Thanks so much for joining me today and allowing me to stretch out a little bit. As I said, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow. And as long as we have to, until we see that we're getting somewhere. Stay tuned and support PRN.FM. Bye-bye.